Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Students are heading back to school after summer break, and many are doing so under the strain of massive budget shortfalls and funding cuts. San Francisco's school district trimmed $114 million from their budget to address the deficit that could have forced a state takeover. And that means losing hundreds of teachers, administrators, and staff, and cutting a program that provided 500 high school student internships in health, culinary arts, education, and other career pathway courses. Florida's Orange County Public School District started the year with a projected loss of more than 3,000 students, and that could mean a loss of nearly $28 million in funding from the state. We are also seeing record levels of chronic absenteeism in K through 12 schools, mental health struggles, and declining college enrollments. Some students also say the education they're getting just isn't engaging or relevant to their lives. My soon-to-be 15-year-old niece, who is entering high school today, says she is often bored at school and just doesn't feel challenged. That happened in junior high, and she hopes it'll be different in high school. On tomorrow's show, we'll talk about all of this with teachers. Today, we are speaking with students. Today, we're joined by Sani Arora, an undergraduate student at UC Berkeley, completing bachelor's degrees in computer science and legal studies. Sani Arora is founder and executive director of the Youth Power Project, an organization that works to equip young people with tools to turn their lived experiences into actionable solutions through storytelling, education, and youth-led policy design. Since starting this work at 15, she's helped pass over a dozen youth-authored state and federal laws on mental health, education, tech accountability, and student rights. The Youth Power Project says young people are facing record levels of mental health need, but many of the programs meant to support them are underfunded or disappearing. Hi, Sanvi. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Leah Mordechai, a high school junior at San Francisco University High School, where she leads the debate team, participates in Model United Nations, and runs track and cross country. She's also co-chair of the League of Women Voters San Francisco Youth Council. That's a group of high school and college students who work on voter registration projects and education initiatives. Leah Mordechai is also a member of Youth Transforming Justice, an organization that works to end the school-to-prison pipeline through peer-driven, restorative, and trauma-informed solutions. She interns for the City of San Francisco District 1 office and co-founded the Slavic Youth Circle, which tackles a variety of issues. Hi, Leah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Great to have you. We're also joined today by Betsabe Acosta-Ramos, a sophomore at UC Berkeley studying chemical biology. Betsabe Acosta-Ramos is pursuing her teaching credential through CalTeach, an organization that emphasizes evidence-based STEM instructional practices designed to advance equity and learning for California's K through 12 students. Hi, Betsabe. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Great to have all of you. You know, I want to start by asking you all what your thoughts are about media coverage of students, because we often hear about the issues facing students, but we rarely hear directly from students. Sanvi, let's start off with you. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what you just said. I think that there's a lot of coverage talking about how students are feeling, but rarely do we get to actually talk to students directly and hear how they're doing. I think part of this also has to deal with how we like study success in the education system, different metrics that different groups might deem as measures of success among students might not be accurate to how students feel. They would describe their well-being or whether or not they're thriving. So I think that there's a gap there with regards to who we're hearing and how we're asking those questions. And also sometimes I feel like with students, the media might flatten certain experiences into different stereotypes. And there's a little bit, I think there's a little space for some of the more complicated realities in between these different traditional stereotypes for how young people are engaging with different systems. So I think now more than ever, it's really important to have students come out and tell their own stories. and bring context that otherwise might be missed.
Can you talk about some of those stereotypes?
Yeah, absolutely. One big one that we hear a lot is that students are, the current generation of students at least, are very apathetic, or another stereotype is that they are just they lack passion or lack drive, especially with AI, a lot of stereotypes around how young people are using AI in the classroom end up blanketing the different nuances or contextual experiences that might be leading to them turning to different technological tools. So that's one example that I can think of, especially with regards to, policy. I think that there tends to be a misconception that young people are either apathetic of like the different things going on in their communities, or they are looking to make trouble. So understanding that young people do have a lot of, I would say, very thoughtful critiques or thoughtful commentary on the issues going on facing themselves and their communities is really important as well.
Interesting points. And I'd love to talk with all of you later in the show about more of this, because you just made me think about the many, many stories and interviews that I've heard over the years about how social media is affecting students. And I'm so curious about this because I did not grow up with social media when I went to school, and I really can't imagine having access to all of this information and photos on the phone in real time and tagging and all of this. I just can't even imagine what that's like as a student. So I'd love to chat with you all about that later in the show. What would you like to add, Betsabee? What are your thoughts about what you hear and see in the media about students? What do they get right and what do they get wrong? Because it is just all too rare to hear directly from students.
Yeah, I think that current coverage on students, it depends on whether or not it's good or bad. Recently in some schools, there's things like ethnic studies being discussed. And I feel like a lot of the coverage on that has been a lot about parents and the school board sort of talking about how this could impact their students. And I think that what's lacking is the perspective of the students themselves and whether or not they're interested in taking these classes, why they think that this is important. I think that it's extremely important to have student media and coverage, because a lot of times, yeah, you're kind of looked at as a monolith. And if one person speaks up and has an opinion, then a lot of people assume that everyone else has that same opinion. And I think that it's important to allow for students to bring in more of their input, because these are kids that are going through these classes that are learning this information and learning, how to identify different things. And so it's extremely important.
Leah, what would you like to add?
Yeah, I think I agree with everything Vistavi and Sanvi have said. And something that I'd like to add is, I think something that the media does is it covers a lot of these big movements like ethnic studies, especially right now in the San Francisco Unified School District is blowing up and it's becoming some of these major news stories. But I think it's also important to highlight that there's student activism in sort of all schools everywhere, and it doesn't necessarily always get media coverage. And I think it's important that the media starts incorporating more of these smaller stories, individual voices, to really get a diverse understanding of what's happening in all schools, not just the big stories that are making the headlines.
So tell us about this. This is really important. What sort of activism is happening at San Francisco University High School and other high schools that you think we should know about?
Yeah, I think something that has happened in my school specifically that's drawn a lot of attention to our community was during the beginning of the Israel-Hamas conflict, there was a lot of discourse at school and a lot of uncertainty, and our administration just shut all the students down and said none of the teachers are allowed to talk about this. And so I think like the students organized a sit-in, and they just wanted our administration to be open and honest and talk about what was going on in the world. And I think that things like that happen in all schools everywhere, and it's important to sort of showcase those stories as well.
Yeah, can you talk more about this? How did the students respond to that?
I think it was very hard for all the students to sort of to feel safe at school when their administration was not being fully open and honest just about something that's going on in the world, and was trying to ignore an issue that felt very important to the students. And they just what ended up happening was they ended up having a sort of community day where we had a lot of round table discussions about this, and that's sort of how we came to conclusion on that issue. And I think I think that things like that need to happen at all schools, where when there are important things happen in schools, maybe like related to mental health or gun safety or things like that, it's very important for administrations and schools everywhere to just be open and honest and have conversations with their students instead of sort of sidelining issues and trying to ignore them.
Sanvi, does this speak to your experience also? Well, I mean, you're a senior at UC Berkeley. Leah is a junior at San Francisco University High School. But does anything that Leah just said speak to your experience or what you've heard from fellow students?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's so important to create space for people to have dialogue. And I think it creates a lot of distrust between students and their universities or even their high schools when they feel like these spaces are taken away, or that there needs to be kind of restrictions on like thoughtful inquiry almost. Like, everyone should be allowed to engage with these issues in a way that's productive for them and their community. And I think that when we see this like beyond just like political conversations, but with mental health specifically, I remember when I was in high school and I got started in like mental health work, one of the biggest things that we saw amongst young people, that especially my peers, was that when schools fail to discuss mental health, or if a mental health issue impacts the school district and they don't respond, or they just kind of shove it under the rug, it creates even more fear around reaching out and even more distrust amongst students. And I think that kind of impacts the whole spectrum of different issues that, an education system might face. And so I really agree with what Leo was saying, that, we need to create these spaces, make it safe for students to have dialogue. And part of that also means addressing some of the very, I think, unfair stereotypes that are placed or prescribed on those who do speak out, or how like individual actions might, especially among students, end up like being conflated with how an entire generation might view an issue or might want to engage with something.
And Betsabe, what has been your experience around these issues?
Yeah, so my senior year, my final year of high school, that was sort of when the Palestine conflict kind of arose a lot more, and there was both sides of sort of people being like anti-Hamas and also anti-Israel, and it kind of happened, the same thing happened as like the San Francisco school districts, where for a while the district decided not to talk about anything, decided to keep it quiet. A lot of teachers did not allow that sort of talk about the conflict in the classroom. Once they finally were able to push forward resolutions, there was kind of outrage from both sides. And I completely understand that because, some people wanted, for the district to condemn certain groups' actions, while others were just asking for the support and resources, mental health resources that students may need during their time at school. And I think that it's important to hear everyone's opinions, and especially with these sorts of issues, what really matters is the students feel supported in their district and they feel like it's a safe community. I think that that's sort of where the district had kind of fallen. There are a lot of kids that mentioned that they felt unsafe being in classrooms, and I think that, had they provided a more proper response, and on a more quicker timeline, I think that it would have helped ease the community a lot more.
You're all bringing up so many important issues here. And given that you do have access to social media, it's a different world for young people now because you can see what's happening around the world, in Gaza, for example, in Sudan, in many cases in real time, and talk about these issues. And where else would you want to talk about them other than in the classroom? So can you talk a little bit about this, Sanvi? Because that is a major change across generations that you are now, in addition to focusing on what's happening in the classroom, you're able to bring so much more of the outside world into the classroom, which just didn't happen pre-social media. I mean, you had newspapers and television stations, and you can talk about things happening in other parts of the world, but it was very different because it wasn't a constant. You might see a story on the news last night, but now you can learn about what happened 5 minutes ago. It's just so different. Can you talk about how that has affected the classroom and just the way you engage with information with your peers when you talk about a variety of issues?
Right. I mean, the irony with all of this is that, the more that we're exposed to political content, which is obviously something that has skyrocketed since the introduction of social media, the harder it can be to feel like you can act on any of it. A lot of these global conflicts and global atrocities are basically like live streamed now in the way that social media can report on anything within minutes, and how democratic of a tool it is that anybody can report on anything. I think that constant exposure, though, students and young people, as anybody would, like, do care and do react to what we see. But at the same time, this almost oversaturation of things that are going on, and constant exposure without, clear action or clear opportunities to be able to engage with it, can also lead to burnout and fatigue amongst a lot of young people. And I think that's where the role of education is so important. We learn, for example, in history classes about, what from, 20 years later or several decades later, how different tools were used to respond to different historical conflicts. And then we can use, at the same time, we can see those same themes being repeated in real time. And I think education systems should create space to use this as an opportunity for students to come together to think critically and to really be active citizens and participate in dialogue around these issues. But at the same time, without that space and education being such a big part of young people's lives, like across the board, when that space is taken away, I think it just leaves a lot of students with that burnout and disengagement. And also, I think that it kind of, I think that another big role of education is in cultivating community. And a lot of these issues are really heavy, and to be exposed to it over and over again constantly, I think creating spaces in the classroom and school to unplug, to curate, like what we take in to kind of get that media literacy education, can be really helpful, but kind of tie in the mental health piece to that. And finally, I think education systems are generally just such a big forum for like gathering and holding space, like whether it be through having demonstrations, through hosting walkouts, through even just hosting vigils, or having a school assembly speaker come in and talk about something. I think that's also a form of healing. So many of these issues are so personal for so many people. So I think as much as we can, recognizing that right to come together and talk and have that dialogue is part of like coping with these things is also really important.
Wow. Really great points. What would you like to add, Betsabe?
I pretty much agree with that. I feel like a lot of the media that we see nowadays, and it's super easy to be able to, see conflicts that are happening, especially if it's something that happened just like 5 minutes ago somewhere across the world. And I do have to say that sometimes I feel like I consume so much media, so much news around the world, that sometimes it feels a little bit helpless. Like I feel like I don't know what to do, and what can I do if my own government is not necessarily responding to these conflicts? What can I do as one person living here? And so there have been moments in which it's felt sort of like an out-of-body experience, where you're seeing these things that are happening to other people around the world. However, you sort of have to go on with your day. You have to go to school. You have to do all these things. And so I think, especially now more than ever, having the resources for the students is extremely helpful and is key. It's crucial to the students. especially with things that are happening in our government with, immigration, things like that. Those issues have affected communities around me and people that I hold close to me. And so it's very scary to feel like you are consuming a lot of this media. You're seeing all these things that are happening to people nearby you, or maybe, even further away. And so, especially in times like these, it's important to know that there's things that can alleviate the sort of stress that you're also putting on yourself. Things like Sanvi had mentioned, like doing demonstrations or walkouts and protests, there are things that may help you feel like, yes, you are doing something. You are able to channel the sort of stress and the emotions that you feel out to do this action and to, fight for what you believe is right. So along with that, of being able to show that you are a participating member of just like society, also making sure that you have an important support system, because, there's a lot of things going on in the world right now.
So much going on. Leah, what would you like to add before we go to break?
Yeah, I definitely agree that I think you consume so much information on social media and it can be so overwhelming. But I think social media can sort of be a double-edged sword in that way where you consume so much media, but I think also it has become a space for our generation to do activism. A lot of activism now happens on social media with certain Instagram accounts that are either trying to promote something, support something, raise money for something. So I think social media at the same time can overwhelm someone, but it can also be an outlet to sort of deal with that and start some of that activism beyond just protests and things at schools. And I also agree that the education system, I think, is a very good or needs to be a good support system for everything students are seeing on social media. It needs to be a space where students can come and bring current events that they see online and process that and have a space to learn how to deal with that, form their own opinions about it, so then they can go and try and make any type of change they believe is necessary.
Leah, do you think that the conversations we're hearing about social media and screen time is overblown, or do you think that it is warranted? I mean, there are books that are being written about all of this.
Yeah, I think screen time is sort of a double-edged, also a double-edged sword. I think not everything that students are doing on their phones is necessarily negative. Like sometimes it's a form for connection for students to talk to people all around the world, to talk to their friends, to connect with people that they might not be able to, that they're separated from. But at the same time, I do think that there are valid mental health concerns due to just what screen has doing to our brains, how it keeps us awake at night sometimes. And so I don't know that it's necessarily overblown in proportion. I think the science behind how screen time is maybe a little toxic isn't overblown, but I think that it's also important to consider that screen time and being on our phones also gives young people a way to connect with other people around the world, sometimes a way to unwind, and I think it's important to not ignore that as well.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today, we are joined by three students. We're having a wide-ranging conversation about the U.S. education system and what needs to change. And it is so interesting hearing from these students about how they bring world affairs into the classroom and how sometimes the administration does not want that discussed in the classroom for a variety of reasons. So much has changed with education, given that information is available 24/7, and students are very interested in learning about what is happening around the world. So it is rare to hear directly from students. If you have any questions for our guest today, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. If you have a student in your life, or if you are in school and you'd like to contribute to the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Leah Mordehai, a high school junior at San Francisco University High School. Sanvi Arora is an undergraduate student at UC Berkeley. And Betsabe Acosta Ramos is a sophomore at UC Berkeley. We also wanted you to know that Cross Currents on KALW is going to be airing The Homework Machine today. It's going to focus on K through 12 schools and find out how students are or are not adapting to the presence of AI in their classrooms. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with public school teachers. Many say that they're stressed about their jobs and growing less optimistic about the future of education. So we'll find out what is happening in the classroom and what it will take to turn things around. We also want to thank you so much for supporting Your Call and KALW during these unprecedented times. If you'd like to contribute to KALW, you can go to kalw.org. And if you're hearing this show on another station, I hope you can support that station. Local public media needs all of us right now at a time when public media has been defunded. So thank you so much for your support. You make these shows possible. Today, we are speaking with students about what is life like in the classroom? How have things changed? How are they bringing world affairs into the classroom? In many cases, administrators are not allowing it for a variety of reasons. So if you have any stories to share, if you're a student, if you have students in your household or in your family, what has their experience been like? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Sanvi Arora, an undergraduate student at UC Berkeley, who's completing bachelor's degrees in computer science and legal studies. Sanvi is founder and executive director of the Youth Power Project. They work to equip young people with the tools to turn their lived experiences into actionable solutions. She started doing this work at 15, and she helped pass over a dozen youth-authored state and federal laws on mental health, education, tech accountability, and student rights. Leah Mordechai is a high school junior at San Francisco University High School, where she leads the debate team, participates in Model United Nations, and runs track and cross country. She's co-chair of the League of Women Voters San Francisco Youth Council, a member of Youth Transforming Justice, and co-founder of the Slavic Youth Circle. Betsabe Acosta-Ramos is a sophomore at UC Berkeley studying chemical biology. She's pursuing her teaching credential through CalTeach. They emphasize evidence-based STEM instructional practices designed to advance equity and learning for California's K through 12 students. I'd like to also ask you about how engaging and relevant your studies are today, because my niece just started high school today and she was so frustrated in junior high. She said she was often bored. She felt like she wasn't engaged at all. She said she'd rather just be reading her books. So, Leah, you're a high school junior at San Francisco University High School. When you look back at junior high and your high school classes, how engaging were your studies?
Yeah, I think that, I think I agree a lot with your niece, actually, that I found a lot of the class I was taking in junior high very disengaging, and that's why I went to a public middle school, and that's why I actually chose to go to a private school for high school, because now my classes are a lot more focused in specific areas that I'm interested in, and I have a lot more opportunities to take paths and explore opportunities that are specific to my interests and are relevant to my everyday life, and I didn't feel that in my junior high and my middle school, where the classes were just sort of set like English, science, history, and none of it felt very relevant to what was going on in the world at the time, to what I wanted to learn. Some things that I think are really important for students in junior high and high school to be learning are things like financial literacy, digital literacy, how to engage with democracy, civic engagement, and I think those sort of more non-traditional subjects aren't really taught in public schools, not even in private schools, but I have that avenue to sort of pursue that interest if I want to at a private school versus at a public school, there are sort of no options or opportunities for me to be able to do that. And that's sort of why I made that switch. And I think it's really important that the school district starts adding classes and opportunities that are relevant to what's going on in the world today. And we're not just teaching students sort of the basic, educational foundations like history and English and math, but also skills that they will actually be able to apply to their lives once they leave the education system.
Were you able to talk about these issues when you were in public school with any teachers or a principal?
I think there definitely was a space to do that if I wanted to. I had a personally very close relationship with the principal of my middle school, but there wasn't sort of this recognized way to sort of provide feedback or speak out or say, I would like this opportunity or this opportunity. And I think it's also a very known fact that SFUSD is currently in a very large budget deficit, and sort of any ideas like adding classes that are a little bit require some more effort, some more attention, like financial literacy, digital literacy, aren't very feasible right now. So I think that was sort of known and an accepted fact. And so I don't think a lot of students were really thinking about how they could branch out and get these opportunities, because they didn't think that they would be provided to them. So I think in terms of talking to administrators, that was possible, but I think I'm not sure how much change and impact that would have actually made on the classes and education I was receiving.
What about you, Betsabe? What do you remember from junior high and high school? Do you feel like what you were talking about and learning in the classroom was engaging and relevant to your life?
I think that in junior high, a lot of the concepts were mainly just to build a foundation for high school. So it wasn't necessarily extremely hands-on. I think it wasn't until my eighth grade year where they started implementing a different sort of learning curriculum, this sort of Amplify learning curriculum, where it was a little bit more hands-on, more like of the design thinking process. And so that wasn't until after. And once I got into high school, I spent my first year online. So all of my classes were online. A lot of the sort of biology courses, it was just using a simulator on a computer, which was pretty different. So I was able to kind of have online classes in both middle school and high school. I think that also made it very hard, to really understand some of the materials because all you were looking at was just a pair of slides every day. I do think that there were moments in middle school where there were some sort of hands-on projects. In seventh grade, it was more of a biology-focused course and for science, and you would build like a cell model. There were moments in which you could do hands-on projects, but it wasn't something that was too, it wasn't extremely emphasized. And it was more in high school where you're able to delve into more of your interests because they had different course offerings. And I went to Palo Alto High School, and so they had a lot of resources for students and several dual enrollment classes where you could take career technical education pathways, things like principles of engineering, biotech courses. If students were interested in child development, there was an entire pathway for that. And so I think that there were more options once you got into high school. During middle school is more just about setting the sort of basis of your education.
And what was your experience like, Sanvi?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I learned the most in like middle school and high school through extracurriculars, and I think experiential learning is so important, especially through spaces like journalism, speech and debate, theater, the arts. I think those are the kind of spaces that really got me thinking, and I believe that for students, if they don't see like they don't see the point behind education, they're not going to want to do it. And especially nowadays, where like the education system is becoming more about passing tests than really understanding yourself in relationship to the curriculum, creating or continuing to preserve those spaces where you can really think critically, apply the work that the more theoretical curriculum that you're learning in the classroom to something outside of yourself that matters to you is super important. And also feeling like you have agency in those spaces, like being able to take on leadership roles, like intertwining some more interpersonal literacy within like educational spaces was super important to me. And I think really learning by experience and creating spaces where you can actually have experiences like that matters a lot. I remember in middle school, I guess like throughout my education, like I was very quickly disillusioned by this whole idea of like, oh, we just learn to like pass tests or we're learning to get the best grades or get into college, but more so, I more so resonated with the idea of, oh, I'm learning this skill or this concept so I can do better in like debate or I can do better in whatever else I was interested in. And I think that really, that feeling of purpose really elevated my educational experience. And nowadays, the first things that you see schools cut are those spaces. You see them cut the arts and journalism and even just what we were talking about earlier, taking away spaces for thoughtful inquiry, like also makes you feel like you're losing purpose for the for what you're learning in the classroom. So that's kind of what I remember from when I was in high school and middle school. And I definitely feel like, I feel like taking part in spaces that help you feel like you're shaping your own future, like it creates buy-in for students and it makes them want to feel like or want to continue to engage in education.
Oh, it's just so sad to hear that arts programs and journalism classes are being cut. Sanvi, you are founder and executive director of the Youth Power Project. And a few days ago on Instagram, the Youth Power Project posted, young people today are facing record levels of mental health need, but many of the programs meant to support them are underfunded or disappearing. And you're all working to change that. Can you tell us what is the state of the availability of mental health services in schools today?
Absolutely. I think that schools are probably a lot of students' primary touch points to like health education, health services, and it's one of the most ubiquitous ways that you can access that information. But I think the biggest problem with campus or school-based mental health services isn't that students don't want help. It's that that support is oftentimes intimidating for them or not fit to their needs. So something that we're working on at the Youth Power Project is figuring out how we can really create equal playing fields for young people who are seeking those services to provide feedback and to talk to school administrators to get programs that actually fit their needs. One of the biggest things that we focus on, for example, is like the availability of peer-based spaces. A lot of schools, especially college campuses, but also K through 12 schools, when they initially started creating like support spaces for mental health, it was very counseling oriented and very talk therapy, one size fits all. And a lot of young people don't resonate with that, especially because there still is a lot of longstanding stigma around mental health care and at what stage of struggling with mental illness you need to be at to supposedly qualify for reaching out for help. And also the other thing is a lot of the time school counseling services are structured in a way that's going to help students like best like go back to completing their academic journeys or really try to like fix a problem a student has in the immediate without paying attention to like maybe long-term support that they might need. So they're meant to be very short-term. And that does create a lot of distrust because it means that sometimes students feel like they're not supported by their university, they're not supported by their school. If a school has a shortage of mental health support, like counselors, for example, which most schools do, we're in a very widespread workforce shortage in this country with regards to like licensed clinicians, and schools oftentimes don't have the resources to pay competitive wages to these clinicians. So they end up bleeding out a lot and there's a lot of turnover with the staff. That also creates a lot of fracturing because students feel like every single time they go to their school counselor, they have to talk to somebody new and they don't feel like their school really relates to their experience. So diversifying the kinds of services that are offered, looking at alternatives apart from just traditional counseling services or like looking at, for example, peer-based spaces, spaces that are led by yourself or the people around you who you can really relate with is super important. And then apart from that, like we also talk about the importance of funding spaces that are really integral for your mental health, but aren't marketed as like mental health services. So like I was saying before, arts, sports, other spaces where you can really easily connect and find very organic community is obviously so important, especially nowadays when we talk about how social media has created more loneliness, and how schools in general have really been putting a lot of pressure on students.
Yeah, and I just took a deep breath there because I remembered that NPR back in May reported that the Trump administration says it will stop paying out $1 billion. This is billion with a B in federal grants that school districts across the country have been using to hire mental health professionals, including counselors and social workers. The Department of Education under Trump is telling impacted districts that the Biden administration violated the, quote, letter or purpose of federal civil rights law. A Chalkbeat reports that last month, 16 U.S. attorneys general have sued the administration over $1 billion in cuts to mental health funding. I mean, at a time when this money is just desperately needed, well, we're definitely going to be doing a show about that. And then we will ask the teachers that will be on the show tomorrow about what you just all laid out about whether what you're learning in school is engaging and relevant to your lives. Today, we are speaking with a roundtable of students about the state of education today, about what happens inside and outside of the classroom. We rarely hear directly from students, and so we thought this would be a really important conversation to have. Today, we're joined by Sanvi Arora, an undergraduate student at UC Berkeley. She's a senior at UC Berkeley. Leah Mordehai is a high school junior at San Francisco University High School. And Betsabe Acosta-Ramos is a sophomore at UC Berkeley. And let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Leah in San Francisco. Hi, Leah. Thank you for holding.
Hi. Thank you so much for having a conversation with students. I really appreciate it. I know that there is a bill in California legislature, AB 715, I believe, and before it was 1468, that did deal pretty directly with the issue of Israel-Palestine in the classroom. And I believe had, it seems like it would have kind of a chilling effect on the ability to discuss that issue. And I'm just curious, I mean, I remember my teachers talking about it a little back in the late 80s. I'm just curious if your panel has any thoughts or stories they want to share about a teacher that may have either done a very good job of, you know, fostering critical thinking around that issue or having a healthy conversation in the classroom. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much. I just found an article about this in Politico from last month by Eric Hay, who writes, a controversial bill aimed at clamping down on anti-Semitism in California schools includes penalties for schools found to be hostile toward Jewish students and would restrict how schools teach about the Israel-Palestine conflict. The updated version of the bill, AB 715, would define an, quote, anti-Semitic learning environment as one that puts Jewish students at risk of bullying, harassment, or violence. When determining whether a school has run afoul of that standard, state officials would be informed by the lived experience of the school's Jewish community, according to the bill. What are your thoughts about Leah's question? Do you have any examples about how teachers have been talking about this issue? Would any of you like to respond to Leah?
I can sort of share my perspective. So when the conflict, I think it was like when the October 7th event happened, and it was in 2023, I was still in high school at that time. And I kind of mentioned that my district sort of did not respond fast to the situation, though right at the beginning, a lot of people from both sides of the conflict were sharing that, you know, something needed to be said by the district or resources needed to be given to students who were going to be going to school every day. And, you know, they knew about all these events that were happening. I had one teacher that had very lightly touched on the subject. And this was a teacher that I had from a social justice pathway at my school. And I had been a student under them for 3 years, student of theirs for 3 years. And in that classroom, we felt very comfortable being able to discuss these different topics. However, this conflict, I guess, because it was extremely, it was right in the moment, the next day we had the class. I don't think that my teacher felt comfortable enough to talk about the conflict. especially because there were students in the class that, you know, had people that lived in Gaza, and also, you know, there were a lot of people that were Jewish. And so it was very lightly touched on, but also we were reminded to be polite about any comments that we make, that it's, you know, we don't exactly know what's going on in the situation, and that we have to be respectful of everyone's opinions, and we want to make sure that the community is safe for everyone. So that was the only class in which the topic was addressed at all. In others, it was really just, you know, you're back at school, you're here to learn, and that's it. And so I think I had mentioned how my district had responded as well. They responded very late to the conflict, and it wasn't, I don't think it was the best decision. So yeah.
Would anyone else like to respond?
Yeah, sure. I think the one thing to take away here is that, like, avoiding the topic doesn't really make it go away. And students, especially with Israel and Palestine, they're already talking about it. And if the classroom isn't a place for them to talk about it freely, they're going to find other ways to discuss it. But without that space to engage critically, and without a space like an educational system, like a classroom, to hear multiple perspectives, we kind of miss out on a chance to replace, like, otherwise polarizing conversations with, you know, understanding. I think that it's important to remember that a lot of people who are approaching this issue are approaching it out of a real place of personal connection or trauma. And having that baseline level of empathy is something that there's a huge opportunity for the education system to provide a framework for. And so I think that that's where, with regards to these kinds of pieces of legislation that are moving through the legislature, being very careful around, obviously, like, the chilling effect that that may have on whether teachers feel safe to start that space, is important.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Leah, and we'll definitely do a show about this and follow those bills in California. We're getting a number of emails from listeners who just say thank you for sharing all this information. One listener says, it's great to hear directly from students. Your guests are right. I often hear that students are disengaged, but these students are giving me hope for the future. What other changes would they like to see in education? And what else can they tell us that we might not be hearing in the media about students and education today? Sanvi, do you want to take that one first? And we have about, we're almost out of time here. We have about a minute left.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Happy to talk about that. I think that it's important to recognize, especially with the idea of what it means for a young person to thrive, that there are so many different definitions and metrics for that. Oftentimes in the mental health space, for example, we hear that there's a golden ratio of like students to like counselors that we need to hit for a school district to be like really good at addressing mental health concerns. But oftentimes, like, for example, that measure might not capture how long a student might be waiting for support from their school, whether or not a student ended up receiving like proper academic accommodations if they needed it, etc. And so I think that example can provide a good frame for understanding that we need to talk to students not just about their lived experiences, but also utilize like those lived experiences as qualifications for them to continue to shape discussions around what it means for a program or an initiative to be successful in the classroom or in a school system. And then another thing just to cover on that is that so many of these things intersect with one another, and the importance of student voice isn't just that we want to make more effective policy, but also that we want to give students the ability to see themselves as part of a larger community.
Leah, what would you add? We have about a minute left.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything Sanvi said. And sort of echoing what she was saying earlier, I think the most important thing is those sort of out-of-class experiences where students are engaging in skills that are in things that are going to give them life skills, and that they're really understanding why they're doing something, things like debate, Model UN, other activities. And I think it's really key to keeping those programs alive in all schools, because that's what students really love to do. That's what engages them. That's where they really feel that they are learning and growing as a person. And I think maybe involving more classes like that through legislation, having school districts require more classes, it sort of are not only giving students knowledge, but are actually giving them life skills. I know a few years ago, that Gavin Newsom signed legislation that requires students to take a course in financial literacy, which I think was great. And I think we need to keep moving on that track and continue things like that with civic engagement and et cetera.
And Betsabe, what would you like to add? We have a minute left.
I think as well, applying more hands-on education and also just like extracurriculars. I think that especially for students that may not have the access to, you know, do these internships or pay for these programs, giving students the opportunity to explore different careers. During my time in high school, I was able to apply to free programs that were hosted for low-income, underrepresented students. And I think that that helped shape me and helped me identify the things that I was interested in and the things that I wanted to do when I was in college. And that's exactly why I'm here today. And I'm in college studying chemical biology. And I think that allowing that for every single student, whether or not they have, you know, the financial resources to do it, I mean, it's extremely important, as well as providing more resources for teachers. There was recently a bill that passed for climate sciences and requiring climate sciences to in all classrooms and kind of incorporating that into what already exists in the curriculum. Just making that sort of education more accessible for the teachers to be able to input into the into what's currently being taught. There are some free resources out there that have been provided, but there's still much more that needs to be done in order for teachers to feel supported enough to teach additional climate science education in their classrooms.
Yes, and we will definitely talk about that with our teacher roundtable tomorrow. And Betsabe, the program that you just mentioned sounds so interesting. I would love to do a show about what resources are available for low-income students and then first-generation college students. I think this is such an important issue. So thank you for bringing that up. Betsabe Acosta-Ramos is a sophomore at UC Berkeley studying chemical biology. She's pursuing her teaching credential through CalTeach. Leah Mordehai is a high school junior at San Francisco University High School, where she leads the debate team, participates in Model United Nations, and runs track and cross country. She's co-chair of the League of Women Voters San Francisco Youth Council. Sanvi Arora is a senior at UC Berkeley, completing bachelor's degrees in computer science and legal studies. She is founder and executive director of the Youth Power Project. Betsabe, Leah, and Sanvi, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.